All right, so yeah, I will tell you something about the tensionless string, and mostly, yeah, I want to make, yeah. Okay, let me just go straight to it, and you will see. All right, so let's start by some reviewing some general stuff about the gravitational path integral. So whenever we want to compute some, we want to compute some gravitational path integral with fixed boundary conditions. So that's what we want to do, for instance, in ADS CFT. So that, and in principle, we should sum over all possible geometries, but also topologies. So for instance, that was explored in JT Gravity recently a lot, which is a 2D gravity theory with a one dimensional boundary. And if you want to compute the partition function, say for a fixed boundary condition that corresponds to a disk, there is some subtleties how to define that boundary condition. Let me not get into it. But then you should fill in all possible geometries. So for instance, you have the disk, but you have also this disk with a handle, which is like a genus one surface. And then you have all the higher genus contributions. And in principle, should integrate over all of them. So in JT gravity, it's simple enough that you can actually do that. And one interesting thing is that only the disk actually has a saddle point. So only the disk satisfies the equation of motion. And you can study fluctuations around that. All the higher genus surfaces that appear here, there is no there's no metric that actually satisfies the equation of motion, but still they give a contribution to the path integral. So that's one of the interesting things that came up out of JT gravity, that you should also take these things seriously. And another interesting thing is that if you do the same computation with two boundary circles, then again, you should fill in all possible ways. So you can have these disconnected types of geometries, but you should also consider connected geometries. So this is a like a Euclidean theory. So this is a Euclidean wormhole or space-time wormhole. And so it's quite important to include all possible geometries to get the number of phenomena right. And so here's the most famous ones that were explored over the last 3-4 years. So you can get the page curve correctly for the entropy of Hawking radiation. You can see the ramp and the spectral form factor, and another manifestation of this, including these connected geometries, is that the partition function on evaluated on two circles is not the same thing as the squared of the partition function on one circle because of the connected contributions. And the consequence of that is that JT gravity is not due to a single quantum mechanical system, but rather to an ensemble of systems. All right, so I assume you have all probably seen that. And that's not actually what I want to talk about in the talk, but I want to sort of address the analog question in string theory. And the first obvious comment is that string theory should work very differently than that. Because we know, or we're quite sure, that there are ADS CFT correspondences that don't require an ensemble average. And most famously is ADS 5 times S5 due to n equal to 4 sub mills. But the example that plays a role in this talk is ADS 3 times S3 times T4. That's supposed to be due to a symmetric product or orbifold of T4. Okay, so we have these nice examples, and you can ask how does string theory achieve now sum of our geometries, but without introducing ensemble averages. So somehow we should sum of all semi-classical geometries, but we don't want to destroy this factorization of the partition function. Okay, so to answer that, we first have to sort of agree what we even mean if we compute the string partition function, which is something that at least to me is not very obvious. And I want to address it in string perturbation theory. Maybe the more proper setting would be string feed theory, but I don't want to get into that too much. So let's try to compute a string partition function given some boundary condition. So let's say it's ADS 3 or whatever you want. Then what we are I think implicitly often told, but somehow I've never seen that written, really is to kind of sum over all possible bulk solutions. So for instance, in the ADS 3 case, you're supposed to sum over the thermal ADS 3 and the BTZ black hole and so on, all the bulk solutions. And then you're supposed to compute some string one loop or as high loop partition function as you can around these backgrounds. So, and this usual string partition function is something like an exponential that accounts for disconnected world sheets. then you sum over the genera, and then you have some worksheet path integral over your worksheet fields and your worksheet action. So that's at least perturbatively what you should roughly do. Then there would be some non-perturbative contributions like Dean Santons, but there might be also other stuff, and it's really not very clear. So one comment, for instance, is that here in string theory, we only even know in principle how to sum over saddles. We cannot sum over these non-saddle contributions like in JT Gravity, because the fact that something is a saddle means that the worksheet theory is a CFT. So we can only talk about string perturbation theory around saddle backgrounds. So I think it's quite, at least to me, it's very unclear whether an equality like that should hold and what sense it holds and so on. So that's essentially the purpose of the talk, to at least address this in one special instance, what we should even do to reproduce the boundary partition function. Okay, and the model I will discuss is, by the way, I forgot to say that, but please ask questions whenever you feel like it. And so I don't, like, the talk is not particularly long, so feel free to interrupt me. Yeah, so I will discuss a particularly controllable model, which is string theory in AdS3 times S3 times T4, but I will consider it in a special limit, and the limit is where it's supported by exactly one unit of an SNS flux and no Ramond-Ramond flux. And this limit is supposed to be exactly dual to the symmetric product orbifold without turning on any deformations or something like that, as we're usually told to do in AdS3 CFT2 holography. So you can study this example, and then you can try to put it on different backgrounds, not AdS3 times S3 times T4, but some like BTZ black hole or Therm AdS3 times S3 times T4, whatever you want. All right, so first, before going on, I should explain you a little bit more about this supposed duality. So first of all, there's a parameter N here on the right-hand side of the duality that doesn't seem to appear on the left-hand side of the duality. So what it means is on the string side, it's the number of fundamental strings in the background. So when you have like compute some string partition function, then you can have usually any number of strings in the background. But here, this N is kept fixed. So yeah, I mean, more properly, this is the number of asymptotic fundamental strings in the background. You can also view it like this. Background comes from the near horizon limit of a number of fundamental strings and an NS5 brain. And that number of fundamental strings is N. So you keep that fixed. So then one very important feature is that the string is tensionless. And because we are looking at one unit of an SNS flux, that means that the geometry is very small and the string excitations are very light. So it costs you very little energy to excite the string. And so the most extreme incarnation of that is that you have massless higher spin fields in the spectrum. So usually in flat space, we only have the B field and the graviton and some Ramond-Ramond fields, but it's a finite list of higher spin fields. And here, there's a whole exponential tower of massless higher spin fields in the spectrum. So that's quite surprising. Another sort of manifestation of this tensionlessness of the spectrum is that the generic string state kind of looks like this. So what I drew here is the time equal to zero surface of AdS3, which is nothing else than a hyperbolic disk. And now you can look how the typical string state will look like in this model. And it looks like very extended. So these strings actually are asymptotically far out, most of them near the boundary. So you don't have these kind of almost point-like strings that you would have in some supergravity approximation, but you really have some very like large and extended strings. I mean, you can say it in various ways, but somehow this is like kind of the opposite end of the parameter regime than supergravity. Okay, so that's the model. Now we have to ask one sort of important question, namely, I said I want to talk about summing over geometries, but you immediately run into a problem.
Sorry, Lawrence, can I just ask a quick question? So,
yeah, please.
Can you remind me, this theory, did people study it from integrability point of view, and do they know how to describe these big strings from that point of view?
There is one very recent paper that studies it. I'm not very sure about it. So there's one paper by Alessandro Sfondrini who studies this limit. So, well, okay, let me first. So there's this usual problem that integrability usually studies some mixed flux background of Ramond-Ramond flux and then SNS flux. And the real power of integrability comes if you switch on Ramond-Ramond flux. So if you go to pure and SNS flux, there's like people have so far, I think, largely failed to make contact of the integrability description and the world sheet CFD description using some WGW model. So there's a like completely different proposal of how it should work, but it doesn't like it doesn't come from some limit of the usual integrability description.
And physically, physically, do we understand why this limit of turning off the flux is not smooth?
More or less. So there are several things that happen. So from the perspective of gauge theory, your turning off this limit corresponds to turning off all Fayette-Leopoldus parameters in the gauge theory. And there you get some singularities in moduli space of instantons that that are called small instantons. So you basically get some like singularities. Okay, I should let me explain, say something simpler. So basically, NSNS flux has some weird singular behavior usually that, for instance, shows up that you have a continuum in the spectrum that corresponds to these long strings. And if you switch on a little bit of our Ramond-Ramond flux, this continuum disappears. And you can easily see it semi-classically because like the potential gets some additional piece.
I see. So it's some reorganization of who is perturbative and who is non-perturbative.
You mean perturbative alpha prime, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So these long strings are, if you want, the non-perturbative phenomenon in alpha prime. So that's why it's quite hard to see from integrability point of view. Also, I think it's hard to see because usually in integrability, you start with some BPS, like some geodesic, and then you expand around the geodesic. But you see, if you have these kind of long strings, then they look like this here. Yeah. So it's very, like they're very far away from any BPS geodesic that you can study. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank so, yeah, I think it's fair to say that integrability so far has not been very useful in this this regime. Right. Yeah, but maybe it's still to come, right? Yeah. So one question we should ask is about kind of the meaning of geometry in this limit. So because even the graviton, of course, it's still in the spectrum, but it's also a winding state. So it also is like an extended, very long string. And so a priori, I would think that there's no local notion of space-time because if the graviton state is so extended, then I wouldn't know what geometry means. But one thing we can still talk about, which is background geometry. So we can still talk about the background geometry because the background geometry usually just gives rise to world sheet theory. So if you have some sigma model under Calabi-Yau, then it's like you can just forget about the Calabi-Yau, but just treat the sigma model as some abstract CFT. And that CFT, of course, is a well-defined concept, no matter how small the target space is. So, and similarly here, if you have some geometry you want to study the string on, then the target space geometry might be very small, but the world sheet sigma model is still well-defined. And so when in the following, I say something like summing over geometries, what I really do is to sum over different world sheet theories. Because there is a one world sheet theory that describes the BTZ black hole, and there's one world sheet theory that describes the thermal ADS3, and one that describes global ADS3, and so on. And one can ask, one can in principle sum over those. Right. So then, what kind of bulk geometries can we even consider? So in principle, we can consider the string theory in any geometry that is of this form. So it's sum M3. M3 times S3 times T4, so where M3 is some hyperbolic 3-manifold. So in other words, it's locally Euclidean ADS3. I want Euclidean because I'm sort of studying a Euclidean path integral from a space-time perspective.
Sorry, Lawrence, let me ask a very basic question since you encouraged the question. So I think maybe I'm missing something very basic in string theory, but I've never seen we are not used to summing over world shape theories. We fix a world shape theory and we compute vertex operator expectation values in that theory, right?
Right. Right.
So are you trying to see what happens if I were to average and to give a meaning to that average?
It's not an average. I really want to, I would have, in the beginning of this project, I thought that I should really sum over theories. So for instance, we're taught that in ADS-CFT, there is a Hawking-Page transition and like low temperature regime comes from some thermal ADS and high temperature comes from some black hole. And now if you want to study this in string theory, like that's what you do in gravity. You really sum over different, you want to integrate over the space-time metric, and you should integrate over every topology class of the space-time metric. And now the strings is like you can view the space-time metric as some condensate of closed strings, at least perturbatively. And like, but you should still, I would have thought that you should still sum over different space-time metrics and expand around them to some one-loop determinant around them, for instance. So it will turn out that in this example is actually not true. So it's a very good question. So one of the main points of this talk is to kind of tell you that you shouldn't do that. You should just fix one background, one that you like, for instance, therm ADS 3, compute a string partition function on that to any, actually it will turn out to be one loop exact. So you just need to compute the one loop partition function and it will reproduce the full boundary spectrum. So it will also include already the BTZ black hole automatically because you can view the BTZ black hole as kind of a condensate of closed strings. And you will see that this here, you can very explicitly see that it's true.
I thought that if you stay with the background, but take into account all corrections, all non-perturbative string corrections, in other words, if you do string field theory, that you will do the correct computation and you would not need to sum over backgrounds, right?
Yeah, but in string perturbation theory, that's not at all clear that you can really get the full non-perturbative answer from just doing string perturbation theory computation. Like, would you say this is a non-perturbative effect in G-string or the perturbative?
Yes, non-perturbative.
Yeah, so here it will even turn out to be perturbative. And it's kind of surprising how it works. But I agree, it's not at all clear why we should do that. Why we should, like, to me, it's just a priori not clear what I should do in ADS 5 times S 5. If you have infinite
computation. Why wouldn't it also be a question even in flat space? I consider some string scattering amplitude. I expand around flat space and I compute the amplitude. I don't start summing over other geometries that are asymptotic to flat space, right?
Because there's, well, but in principle, you should, because you can view, for instance, some Schwarzschild black hole or something, you can view as some closed string condensate. So it will at some point, like if you're...
Right, but if I were to start... So I agree that the sum, I would have to start resumming in higher genus, right? And at some point, I'm exchanging many gravitons and seeing some sign of black hole physics. But maybe that's non-perturbative. Yeah. So maybe you cannot just see by expanding, right? You would have to introduce some non-perturbative effects to explicitly do the sum over genus. But you are saying that instead of introducing these effects, I can sum over geometries and then do standard perturbation theory. Is this?
Yeah, at least that to like perturbatively, I thought that's the right answer. But, or like there are still other questions, like these are only the subtle contributions. So what about like, but anyway, so perturbatively, I would have thought that this does the job. But it turns out that even perturbatively in this example, you don't have to do that. You just need to stick with one background and you get the others for free.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Ask me again later if it's, if it remains. Okay, so yeah, let's discuss some backgrounds we can consider. So, and like one class of backgrounds that you can consider are like M3 times S3 times T4. And so these are hyperbolic three manifolds. You can do more general things, like you just want the asymptotic geometry to be the right one. But this is kind of a simple choice. And I will stick with this choice. And you can write any hyperbolic 3 manifold as some quotient of hyperbolic 3 space, so which is just Euclidean alias 3 itself. And the quotient is done by some discrete subgroup of SO2C. So then summing over geometries becomes more simple because every geometry just corresponds to some discrete group. And so the examples I already mentioned kind of is, for instance, if you take...
Sorry, let me just ask the question. So again, for example, here you are doing these identifications, right? So the geometries are far away from each other, right? Because either you...
They're very far away, yes.
But if you were to sum over geometries in anything like 4D flat space, there is a continuum of geometries, right? There is a geometry with a very light gravitational wave passing by, and then there is another geometry with 2 gravity waves.
I agree, but so those I would have said you shouldn't sum over them, but it's not very clear. I mean, point is that it's not clear what you should do, so it's as a first approximation, I thought I should do that. And in ADS3, it's very, there's a discrete number only of on-shell geometries. So flat space, you can do much more because you can put some gravitational waves at infinity. In ADS3, you're very rigid. You can just do these groups and it's some discrete thing. So for instance, if you take some integer, just the integers, then you can make up this Thurman ADS3, or BTZ black hole, and probably you've all seen that, but Thurman ADS3 has some non-contractible time cycle, and BTZ black hole has a contractible black time cycle because it's a Euclidean black hole. But they're all the same geometries, just interpreted in different ways. You can also, in something interesting in string theory that you can do is to add a conical defect in the geometry, and you can let this conical defect run in the torus. So that corresponds to taking some additional ZM orbital. You can also consider these wormholes, and to get the wormholes is kind of complicated in 3D because the boundary surfaces have to be at least genus 2, and then the corresponding group is known as a Fuchsian group, and it doesn't matter so much how it's defined, but you can define this wormhole with 2 genus G boundaries, and you can in principle study the string on that kind of geometry. See what you get. So this is kind of going to Pedro's question again. So what? So let's try to compute the Thurman partition function in the boundary CFT. So just the torus partition function. And if this was gravity, then what we would do is to take all geometries that come to our mind and do some one loop determinant around those. It's actually, for the gravity case, it's one loop exact. So if you just need to do one loop determinants, that's what was done by Maloney-Witten. And the spectrum you get is kind of sick. So first of all, it's a continuous spectrum. Second, actually the density of states is sometimes negative in the spectrum. So this continuum, people say it's not a problem because of this ensemble business, but the negative density of states is obviously a problem. And then, recently people have said that you should include more stuff. And maybe you need to include conical defect geometries. That seems to remove the negativities in the spectrum. But also, maybe even more convincingly, you should include these non-saddle geometries. And there's also some arguments that they reduce or they remove the negativities in the spectrum. So that's what you should roughly do in 3D gravity, if there is a sense of 3D gravity. So now we want to do the exactly analogous thing in string theory. And what we can do again is just basically the first line. So we can at least compute some of all these geometries and consider some one loop determinant around those and try to see what we get. So one thing that is kind of is to this situation is that the ensemble is kind of weird in this correspondence. Because we said in the beginning that N that appears as in the symmetric orbifold of N copies, is the number of fundamental strings in ADS3. But string perturbation theory doesn't fix n. If you compute some string partition function, then it will contain like all number of disconnected strings. There's no boundary on how many strings you can put in string perturbation theory. So that was already realized some number of years ago. But so what string perturbation theory instead wants to do is to fix some chemical potential that's essentially a string coupling constant, and you let n vary instead. So n is not fixed, but some chemical potential is fixed. That's very different from ADS5 times S5, where we would fix like the n of sub mls is fixed, and then you compute, you want to find the partition function of sub mls of a fixed n. Here instead, you want to find this kind of grand canonical partition function, which is the sum over all the symmetric orbifold partition functions with different n's, and you weight them with some chemical potential p to the n. And then you sum over all n. So that's the nice thing that is supposed to be reproduced from string theory. And this object actually has a nice formula. So the formula for this is kind of ugly, but once you repackage it into the generating function, it becomes nice. And what it becomes is just an exponential of simple terms. So it's an exponential of sums of partition functions of the T4 sigma model. So what this formula means here is, okay, so this sum here over the L, A, B, and so on, mathematically, it's the sum over Hecke operators. But more physically, what you do is you're computing this partition function with some fixed modular parameter in the boundary, which I call tau boundary here. And now you're summing this T4 partition function over different modular parameters. And these different modular parameters just correspond to all tori that cover the original torus holomorphically. So if you fix some torus with tau boundary as modular parameter, then you can write down a discrete number of tori that cover it holomorphically. Let me just write down the simplest one. So if you have a torus with tau boundary as modular parameter, then for instance, simple torus that covers it holomorphically is just by doubling the fundamental domain. So that would have two tau as modular parameter. But you could also do three tau, or you could do tau half, because this torus would have tau half, and like there's a discrete number of things that you can do. And the sum is just the sum of all of those. And that's what you would kind of expect. So this sum here is the sum of all connected covers, and this exponential also includes disconnected covers. So you like simply put, the partition function of the symmetric product orbifold is just the sum, like the T4 partition function evaluated on all possible covers of the original space where the CFT was defined. And then they're weighted by the degree of the cover. So this P is P to the L, L is the degree of the cover. And this one over L is some symmetry factor. And this is some spin structure you don't have to worry about. Okay, so, and that kind of makes sense because like holomorphic covers is nothing else than a like an SN bundle mathematically. So you have like N pre-images of some point. And if you go around cycles, then you can permute those pre-images. That's exactly the definition of an SN bundle. And this is an SN gauge theory. So that's how this formula comes about, roughly. Okay, this seems kind of technical, but it will turn out that in this correspondence, it's important to notice that these covering surfaces that appear should be identified with the world sheet itself. So the boundary partition function is evaluated on some torus, and then in the partition function, all these covering tori appear, and these covering tori are nothing else than the world sheets of the string. So now you will see in a second how this works precisely. So now basically I want to explain you how to compute the string partition function on one of these geometries. And we will just focus on Thermadius 3, and you can do the same thing on BTZ backhole and so on. And it will turn out you can do it to all orders in GS because it's one loop exact. And you can actually prove that it's one loop exact, which is quite nice. Okay, and the word sheet theory is kind of complicated, so I don't need to tell you too much about it, but you can define it as some Z orbifold. The Z orbifold comes because the target space is also Z quotient of global ADS3. So it's a Z orbifold of the word sheet theory that describes global ADS3. And the word sheet theory that describes global ADS3 is basically known for 22 years. And it's built on a supergroup WZW model that describes the AdS3 times S3. And then there are some degrees of freedom that describe the T4. And they're topologically twisted bosons and fermions. And then you put a number of ghosts, and the ghosts are kind of complicated. So they're not the standard RNS ghosts you're used to. This is not the RNS formalism, but there are some more complicated ghosts. But for pure NSNS background, this formalism that's known as hybrid formalism is still simple enough that you can treat it, and the Wojcicki theory essentially becomes solvable because that's like all easy factors. And one nice thing that happens in the tensionless string, tensionless limit, is that in general, this level of the WZW model here is K, the number of NSNS flux in the background. So if you would have K to 100, you would have this PSU 1.1/2 level 100 in your Wojcicki theory. But if you put the level to 1, then something special happens, because level 1 WZW models often have some free field realizations. Like, for instance, SUN level 1 is like just a bunch of free fermions. And similarly here, this level 1, it has a free field realization in terms of free fermions and free symplectic bosons, which is like a spin 1/2 boson. But so the philosophical point of that is just that the Wojcicki theory is completely free. There's no complicated WZW model or anything. It's just a bunch of free fields. So it's really simple. And so because it's so free, you can just compute almost everything you like. So for instance, you can compute the Wojcicki torus partition function on this ThermAdS3 background geometry. And if you do it, you get some expression, which I wrote down here. And okay, so let me explain some parts of this expression because it's kind of interesting. So first of all, there's this sum over ABCD here. And the sum over ABCD just corresponds to all possibilities of how you can embed your Wojcicki torus inside your target space torus. The target space is a solid torus, and your Wojcicki is also a torus, and you want to embed it in all possible ways. And these embeddings are just described by 4 integers. So if you want, that's the homotopy class of the like embedding of the Wojcicki into target space. And more technically, it comes about like 2 of these integers, like twisted sectors of your Z orbifold, and 2 other integers are some spectral flow and something else I forgot, but that's how they come about in the Wojcicki. And then kind of interestingly is that there is a delta function. So there is a delta function that fixes the Wojcicki modular parameter that I call tau to have a relation with the space-time modular parameter that I still call tau boundary. And that's something very weird. So if you compute any 2D CFT partition function, usually it doesn't have a delta function in its partition function independence of tau. So that's something super weird that happens here. Technically, it comes because you're summing over like infinitely many zero modes, and these zero modes give you this delta function. But I will give you an geometric explanation in a second why this happens. And yeah, then I already included for you this P. So P was this chemical potential that I introduced in the boundary CFT to account for this grand canonical partition function. And I included it here also on the worksheet. Okay, this is some ground state energy. It's not so important. But then finally here you have some oscillator parts. So there's also like in flat space, you would have a bunch of eta functions or something for the string partition function. And similarly here, this is like the T4 sigma model partition function. So that's a bunch of thetas and etas, basically. Something surprising is that there are only 4 oscillator degrees of freedom. So there are 4 bosonic ones and 4 fermionic ones, instead of the usual 8 transverse oscillators that you have in flat space. And the reason for that is basically that AdS3 times S3 becomes so small, and you have like less and less space to oscillate. So one famous incarnation of that is if you take SU2 level K WZW model, if you make K very large, so that's like target space being a sphere, then it has 3 degrees of freedom. If you make K very small, in the extreme case, it's K to 1, then you get SU2 level 1. But SU2 level 1 is nothing else than a free boson, which has 1 degree of freedom. So by making target spaces small in string theory, you can lose degrees of freedom. And that's a kind of extreme case where this happens. You lose 4 fermionic and 4 bosonic degrees of freedom when you go to this tensionless limit. All right. Good. Yeah, so then let's comment more on this delta function. So the delta function just means that the worksheet partition function localizes in the moduli space of Riemann surfaces, and it localizes on all tau boundaries that satisfy this equation. That's just the argument of the delta function that you saw before. And the interpretation of these tau boundaries and taus is exactly that these are the holomorphic covering surfaces of the boundary torus. It's almost the same thing that you saw here when we summed over these different taus. You saw that the taus that appeared in the covering surface are related to this tau boundary by some kind of modular transformation thing. Except that here there's a tau boundary missing in the denominator. But you can always, like, because it's, you know, this is modular invariant, so you can like simplify it a little bit and bring it to this form. So basically what this means here is that like this is exactly the same formula. And so it means that your worksheet partition function localizes on all these holomorphic covering surfaces of the torus, the boundary torus. And whenever worksheet and target space modular parameters are related like that, then there is a holomorphic covering map from the worksheet torus to the boundary torus, and the degree of that covering is the determinant that you saw also appearing in the formula before.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is the point that in this formalism there is a one form on the worksheet?
One form.
This constraint on the complex structure of the torus seems to. I mean, it's a reminiscence of what happens when you have a one form on the worksheet, that the integral over the zero mode localizes the complex structure of the torus to have an on zero map.
Are you talking about the MB-twister string or something similar?
I had in mind something. No. I was having in mind something called non-relativistic strings, where there is a one form on the worksheet.
Yeah.
So there, the same thing happens when you integrate over the worksheet fields. The genus G modulus of Riemann surface localizes to a submanifold. On the torus, it localizes to a bunch of points. Yeah.
Here actually. I don't like, I think more that it's not the one form, but it's like a one half form. So it's because technically it comes from the, like, there's this free field realization of this PSE 1,1/2 level 1.
Yeah.
That's in terms of like free fermions and free bosons. But those free bosons have spin one half. So they're like ghosts. And those ghosts and those bosonic degrees of freedom are what makes you able to show this localization. It's just that they are so constrained, they have to behave holomorphically and just satisfy many constraints. These constraints
do they have zero mode on the torus on a genus G surface?
It depends what in general not, but it, like, they have zero modes exactly where the delta function is.
Okay, so they do have. Okay,
yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Other questions? Okay, let me ask after the slide again. So you can prove essentially kind of what I already alluded to a second ago. You can prove this property for arbitrary genus and arbitrary bulk manifolds. So it's just some like holomorphic argument that's like, if you want to, it comes from some zero modes, or like I view it as like just some constraints, because these correlators with these free bosons inserted are very strongly constrained. So you can prove this kind of localization for arbitrary genus. And that allows you also to show that in this case, the partition function is one loop exact, because simply every covering map or every covering surface of a torus is again a torus. That just follows by Euler characteristic. The Euler characteristic of the torus is zero, and so every Euler character of any covering surface still has to be zero. And because of that, the string partition function is one loop exact. So that ceases to be true if you have some genus two handle body or something. So it's just in this Magnier string. The Magnier string. But it's a very nice property, because it allows you to, instead of doing the integral of a modular space of Riemann surfaces, what you have to do is just to sum over all possible covering space. You don't have to really do the integral. So you can actually compute the string partition function at higher loops if you want. It's not so impossible. Well, at least formally. Okay, yeah, so now we can actually compute the string partition function. All we have to do is to take the expression I showed you before and integrate it over a modular space of Freeman surfaces, and that's very easy. There's one last subtle point that I don't really know how to address, because there should be also a sphere partition function. So I talked about the torus partition function on the worksheet. I showed you that all the higher loops vanish, but I haven't showed you that actually the tree-level piece, what the tree-level piece does. And the reason that this is kind of subtle and I think not well known how to, or not known how to compute it, is because of the boundary conformal anomaly. So the boundary CFT has some conformal anomaly. And so in principle, the partition function depends on the metric of the boundary CFT. And somehow this has to enter in the in the computation. And I think it should enter somehow in the sphere, but I have honestly no idea how to compute it from string theory. So what I will do is just to cheat, and I will use the gravity answer, because the gravity answer is very simple or well-known how to compute. You just do some holographic, like you put some cutoff surface in the bulk, and you can compute the gravity on-shell action by putting some counter terms and so on. So, and you can just read off, so the gravity answer should correspond to the sphere partition function, because just by comparing the gravity answer goes like 1 over g Newton, which is 1 over g string squared. So that should come from the sphere. But I think it's an important open problem how to see that in string theory. Anyway, so it tells you that the sphere partition function should roughly look like this. So it should be pi n times the imaginary part of the boundary torus modular parameter. So what, like, I made it sound probably very complicated, but what the sphere partition function really does is in the boundary, it just puts this factor, like the usual factor that we have for a 2D CFT torus partition function. Okay, so with all these caveats mentioned, you can just now do this integral over moduli space, and what you get is a very simple answer. You get this exponential of the sum over some integers, and then you evaluate this torus partition function on these modular parameters. And it's actually exactly the same formula as the one I showed you before for the partition function of the symmetric product orbifold in the grand canonical ensemble. So you get exact agreement for the Snellman-ADS3 and the symmetric orbifold. And now, of course, you can do it for any other background you like. You can do it for this BTZ black hole, but it's already obvious that the BTZ black hole will give the same thing as Snellman-ADS. Because if you take this Snellman-ADS and do some, like the BTZ black hole, you get by doing some boundary modular transformations, the modular transformation space-time. But you already saw that this guy is equal to this guy, and this guy is modular invariant. So if you do a modular transformation on this guy, nothing will change. And you get exactly the same result, up to some spin structure that I'm not discussing here. And in fact, you can do it for any sort of black hole. There's this SL2Z family of black holes, and they will all give the same result. And finally, also the conical defect you can do, and it also gives the same result. So that is harder to see, but you have to do a new computation, and you again see that it gives the same result. Yeah, so that is kind of interesting that you don't have to, like, all these backgrounds seem to always give the same. So maybe for Pedro, it was obvious, but it wasn't obvious.
But just a question. Now you can also see how the various terms in P reorganize each other, right? And
yeah,
how one background from the point of view of another is a bunch of terms, right?
Yeah, that's right. So that's what I will tell you now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So yeah, first, the first obvious comment is that instead of like having symmetric orbifold partition function being as like a sum of a bulks, like you really have the symmetric orbifold partition function being the partition function on any bulk geometry and including string corrections around it. And summing over geometries would overcount states, I think. And yeah, as Pedro said, we should now be able to identify any state in any bulk geometry with another state in another bulk geometry, because you could have computed the result either starting from BTZ or from thermal ADS or whatever you want. Okay, so let's get to one kind, like one example. In general, I think it's hard to do that. I mean, you just know that the spectrum is the same, but it's hard to pinpoint which state should exactly correspond to which state. But you can like find some things. For instance, you could try to identify the BTZ black hole from the thermal ADS3 partition function. So we computed a string partition function on thermal ADS. We got agreement with the boundary CFT. And the boundary CFT is supposed to be dominated by the BTZ black hole for very high temperature. And so we didn't put in a BTZ black hole, but what we can do is just to see what dominates the answer at very high temperature and try to declare this to be the BTZ black hole. So that's something you can do. Maybe it's naive, but. And if you do it, you find that what dominates the answer are strings that wind, that wind many times around the spatial circle of the ADS and any number of times around the time circle. So by many times, I mean really n times, where n is the n in the symmetric orbifold. So it's n is very large. So this would be the answer in the canonical ensemble. In the grand canonical, you would sum of all of those. Whereas the action doesn't actually depend, the contribution doesn't depend how many times it winds around this circle. So it could wind once or twice, but not the parametrically large number of times. So yeah, so then you could try to identify the BTZ black hole with these kind of string excitations that are very, very heavy. In fact, they're non-perturbatively heavy in some sense. So, okay, we could maybe even discuss whether this is now non-perturbative or perturbative, because the reason is that n is roughly like one of G string squared. So the winding number of these strings is like one of G string squared. So it's like, while this is still a perturbative string and it's light, if you make it very, very long, you can make it heavy. So that's why it's basically this can change the background geometry, whereas some like light string on it on the background couldn't change it. Okay, yeah, another example you can do is the conical defect. And the conical defect, so you can like view it, this conical defect with this deficit angle 2 pi times 1 minus integer to the minus 1 as a particular string state in ADS. And the string state now is our strings that wind exactly n times around the boundary, not like infinitely many times, like very many times, but it's always fixed number of times n. But you have many of those strings. And again, they can wind any number of times around the time cycle. Okay, so this you kind of you can argue, but I don't know a general recipe of how you would identify some string state with some geometry. So you have to always find some characteristic that you can identify. Okay, yeah, one more thing I want to say is regarding the Hawking-Page transition. As I said already earlier, we learned usually that in gravity, something like this is true, that if you compute the boundary partition function, then you should sum over the different geometries. And this guy dominates at low temperature and this guy dominates at large temperature. And at some point there's a page, this Hawking-Page transition that where they exchange dominance. And here the Hawking-Page transition is a bit different. So it comes from different dominating Wilczek configurations in the same background. So for instance, you could describe it in thermal ADS3. Then at low temperature, you have these guys, whereas at high temperatures, you have these guys. So here, that means they wind many times around this cycle. Here, it means they wind many times around this cycle. You could, of course, describe this also. Both of those contributions could be from BTZ. You could like, just rotate the picture by 90 degrees. Or you could also view this as coming, like these are kind of the vacuum strings in thermal ADS, whereas these are very highly excited in thermal ADS. So it's maybe more like economically convenient to describe them in BTZ black hole language or something. But the point of view, like the point is really that these are the same states in string theory, even though they look very different. All right. So yeah, finally, that I have one slide on the factorization problem that I mentioned in the beginning. So yeah, another problem that we have in ADS CFT is that the boundary CFT is supposed to be only one CFT in string theory, and there's not supposed to be an ensemble. So, but we already saw that there are possible wormhole geometries we can consider. So we can consider this genus 2 wormhole geometry. And so if you have something like this, seemingly you're doomed because that seems to lead to a non-factorized answer for the string partition function. But you can still compute the string partition function on this wormhole. So I cannot compute it to the same level of detail. I showed you the torus partition function before, but you can compute it in some more abstract way. And there are some factors that are unfixed and so on. So it's not as rigorous, but you can still say many things. And for in particular, what you can say is that this partition function only receives contributions from covering maps that map you either holomorphically to the left boundary or holomorphically to the right boundary. So, but the word sheet is always kind of close to one boundary or close to the other boundary. It's never somewhere in the middle. And if you know that, you can argue that the wormhole partition function will in fact be a product. It's a product of all strings that contribute to the left boundary and all strings that contribute to the right boundary. And so because of that, the wormhole is actually, for the string, doesn't really look like a wormhole because the string can never penetrate in the wormhole. And it, for the string, it more or less looks like a disconnected geometry because there's no way of probing the interior. And so because of that, even though there's this background geometry, it doesn't really matter that it's there because it still leads to a factorized answer. And it, what I told you before is still true, that you could compute like the partition function on a genus two surfaces. You could compute either using some disconnected geometry or you could compute it using this wormhole geometry. And I think that's the mechanism by which factorization is saved in this example of holography, at least.
Is there a connection to this half wormholes that people discuss these days?
Yeah, I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. That's a quick question. Answer, okay.
Okay. Are there other questions?
If you had to sum over backgrounds, are you saying that string theory would not be unitary? Doesn't perturbative unitarity imply that you can't sum over this different background?
Sorry, what does it have to do with unitarity? So for instance,
if you say that the amplitude you have to sum over different backgrounds, so normally, at least I'm used to it in flat background. I mean, unitarity means that probability is conserved without having to, you know, sum over different background.
Yeah. Well, I have no idea what would happen if in flat space you sum also over the, like, I mean, ultimately it should somehow be contained. If you like summing, it might be only approximate, but if you compute some, let's say Veneziana or maybe Virasoro-Shapiro amplitude in flat space, and you are able to do all the higher genus contributions and many, many strings and some limit, there should be some emergent, like there should be like a contribution that looks like from just scattering on a wormhole, on a black hole background. Right. And so in some sense you're summing like over geometries, but it's already included in the string path integral. At least you might hope that this is the case. I'm not actually sure whether this is the case. I don't think that there's
I just mean perturbative unitarity. I just order by order in perturbation theory.
But this is a non-perturbative.
Now I'm confused. So non-perturbatively, I think we don't know what to do in string theory.
I agree.
I thought your question was just perturbative.
So here is perturbative because, so it turned out to be a perturbative thing, but I think it's partly because of this grand canonical partition function business. Why it turned out to be perturbative, because like why could it be, you could ask why can it be that the sphere and the torus somehow can compete, because the sphere is 1 over g Newton and the torus is seemingly of order 1, so that's why you would always say then like that cannot be possibly perturbative. That's but true. Here it can be because you have this very, very long winding strings, so you can make the torus big, the torus contribution big by this by these winding strings.
Okay.
I'm not sure in flat space. In flat space, there are no winding strings. So I doubt that something will be true like that.
Okay. I think I understand. Thanks.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I have no idea in general what you should do. I think it's very unclear. Other questions? If not, okay. If not, let me.
Can I ask just a quick clarification on how this actually restores factorization? Because normally you just say the wormhole geometry. It's kind of obvious that it doesn't. It when you're summing over geometries, the perspective, it kind of makes it obvious that it's not factorizing. But like, are you saying there's additional corrections in this case that kind of puts it? Or I don't know.
Yeah, that's one way of saying it. So I mean, in the string, so there's again this subtle issue of the sphere partition function that I'm not entirely sure about. So let's and the sphere is kind of what is seen in gravity. But here in perturbative string, if you compute like the one loop and two loop and so on, then it would just comes from some worksheet strings, right? So there are strings that, and you can show because of this localization business that the string is either very close here or very close here and never interacts. Like this side never interacts with this side. There's no string that goes from here to here. There's no interaction whatsoever. So that's why this wormhole looks disconnected from a string theory point of view. And again, it's kind of because it's kind of too small. So the target space geometry is too small to host some strings in it. If you would make that, like, that's not a semi-classical background geometry. It's a very small one. So yeah, it's kind of a very different mechanism that people usually, if they say it's factorization is restored, they say, oh, if you sum over everything, then there are like some D-brain states and so on. And if after you've summed over everything, maybe factorization is restored. At least that's what I usually get here from people. So here it's slightly different. So you don't have to sum over everything. It's just that the wormhole itself is already factorized.
Okay.
The sum over everything, isn't it basically in your model, the sum over P that you had?
Sum over P. Yeah, if you want. I mean, yeah.
If you were to isolate a given P, right, then it would behave like a wormhole or no? Or it doesn't make sense to say like this.
I'm not sure. Okay, there's a question. If you have two boundaries, then in principle, you can introduce two Ps because they don't have to sit at the same potential. And it depends a bit on what your philosophy is. If you want to introduce two Ps, then you can go to finite n, but this n on the left side doesn't have to be the same n as the n on the right side. So that's why you're not landing on some diagonal piece only, but you're landing on really, it's still factorized. This business with the grand canonical ensemble, I think it's mostly some string perturbation theory question. It's maybe not so important for physics. I think it's mostly that string perturbation theory gives you the grand canonical partition function, and that's fine. But the boundary tells us that also the canonical one is sensible. I mean, the canonical one still makes sense. So it's maybe just that we don't have a good formalism in the bulk to get directly the canonical partition function. But I'm not sure whether there's a particular physical significance that the string perturbation theory gives you the grand canonical one. And for instance, if you do the same thing in some S-dual picture where you have some D1, D5 system, and you would compute some string worksheet partition function, you would expect to get the canonical partition function, because like the background is sourced by D-brains and not fundamental strings. So, yeah.
Can I ask you, this may be semantics, but you know, when I'm doing when you're doing the string world sheet path integral, wouldn't the world sheets go all over the place, including going to both sides of the wormhole? And then localization though is telling you that all of those contributions cancel out, and the only important ones are on one side or the other. That's just a slightly different set of words than you were using. I'm just wondering, though, if it's...
Yes. So, probably my choice of words mostly comes how you show this kind of localization. But yeah, I guess you're right that they you can also view it as canceling out. The way you show it is like you compute essentially some kind of correlator with some okay, if you can also do the whole thing with correlators, but the partition function, there would be no vertex operator, and you compute, there are actually some fields on the world sheet that give you directly this partition function, the covering map. So, and you can use these fields on the world sheet. What did I do? Sorry. You can use these fields to show that this correlator has to localize in this fashion.
Right.
So, but it's true that if you think about it in some path integral perspective, maybe, of course, there would be off-shell configurations that don't satisfy this. That's right.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. So let me summarize, and then if there are more questions, we can again ask. So yeah, I just want to give you three kind of important lessons that were important for me. So one thing is that the world sheet theory for the tensionless string localizes on the modular space of Riemann surfaces to covering maps in the boundary. And that basically makes this duality manifest. So that the world sheet is just a thing that, like in the boundary, you have to sum of all these covering maps, and these covering maps are the world sheet. Then the partition function, if you compute the partition function of the tensionless string on any of these geometries, then it seems to only depend on the conformal boundary of this manifold. So I extrapolated a little bit of what I said in the talk, where I mostly discussed this with Thurman ADS and BTZ, so on, but it seems to be very true. It seems to be true kind of generically. And maybe it's even true if you consider more general geometries that are not of this nice factorized form. And it seems to apply that there is no sum over geometries that you have to do explicitly in some string path integral. You just have to do the perturbative string perturbation theory around one fixed background. And it also leads to a resolution of the factorization problem. And then one third point is that if you do string perturbation theory, then you land on this Grand-Hermann-Curl ensemble, which is a kind of weird ensemble because you're not fixing the central charge in the boundary, for instance. You're really summing over the symmetric orbifold of different copies of n. And that's what the string perturbation theory is apparently giving you. Okay, so yeah, these are three takeaways maybe. And if you have more questions, I'm happy to answer. Thanks.
All right, thanks a lot for this talk. That was great. But yeah, I'll just encourage people to unmute and ask questions if they have more.
Can I ask a question, Lawrence? Do you have any comment? There was some recent developments on trying to find this dual world sheet theory for n equals 4. And do you have some comments about it and how on about how some of the things that you said could be transposed now that we have those new results?
First of all, I've tried to understand their paper. So the first comment is maybe it's kind of amazing that if you take if you modify this model a little bit on the world sheet, like basically they have done some kind of reverse engineering. They know the spectrum of super mills, and then they can basically need to double the degrees of freedom on the world sheet, and then they impose some physical state conditions, and then you reproduce the spectrum on the nodes of free super mills, which is already quite nice. I think. At the moment, it's kind of hard to see how this formalism is supposed to work. So it's not any of the known formalisms. It's not Green-Schwarz. It's not pure spinner. It's not hybrid formalism. It's nothing of that is known. So it's not very clear to me at the moment how, they don't write down any cohomology that you have to take. And if you take the cohomology, you get the spectrum. So they just postulate basically. How the spectrum comes out. So in particular, it's not very clear to me how you would compute some higher genus amplitudes or something like that. But I think these things are very unclear at the moment. I would hope that something similar is true. So because it's built on the same types of fields. So you still have these kind of symplectic bosons and fermions and so on. You basically have the same fields, but just doubled. So I think all these localization things probably provided you work out this cohomology, which I think should probably work. But if you work it out, then probably there should still be some kind of localization like that. And
okay, because I was confused, because when you mentioned this localization, you seemed to say it was something special to some particularities of this model, right?
Yeah, I mean, special in the sense that if you go to some random point in modular space, so for instance, there's some mixed flags, then for sure it doesn't localize like that. That's for sure wrong. So it's the so it only happens in this tensionless limit. But I think it's probably like the some hope is that if you go to the free limit of super MLs, then it might still be localized. I guess Nathan has much more to say about that. Maybe you would ask him.
Okay. But then the idea would be that you could also in N equals 4. So what about computing just in the three correlation functions of genus 0? Is that hard to do in this model that you described today?
Three-point function at genus 0, it's very easy.
Will it also be easy in N equals in this free N equals 4 world shift theory? Or
I don't know, because I don't know, maybe there's some, like at the moment, it's really like a cookbook recipe, I think. So it's not, there's not some cohomology.
They have a conformal field theory, so they can't even define what you mean by a three-point amplitude.
Yeah.
It's just a set of fields, but it's not a conformal field. And the question about localization, so for some reason, which I think is related, the ambi-twister also localized. So that's, and that certainly describes N equals 4 Supreme Mills. So maybe there's a question.
Yeah, but I think it's exciting. I don't know whether it leads to something, but like getting the spectrum out is non-trivial, even if it's a cookbook recipe. So.
Very nice. Beautiful talk. Thank you.
Thanks.
Can I ask, how does what we've learned here or seen here today, how does that fit with the very old, the old story of the fairy tale? Where I thought there was a sum over geometries.
Yeah, that's right. So the fairy tale is for the elliptic genus, right? So you fix some AS3, S3, K3. And the point is that in the, so this is very far away from the semi-classical geometry, but there's a modulus you can turn on. That is like some modulus that brings you away from the symmetric orbifold. And if you go this modulus for a very long time or very long, like if you turn it on a lot, then you're supposed to land on some semi-classical gravity background, which is really like the supergravity background, AS3, H3, K3. And this, if you would now compute something like that in supergravity, you would expect a sum over geometry. At least that's a very good description of supergravity to do something like that. That means if you compute this elliptic genus that is protected in supergravity, you would need to sum over geometries. So that's why the elliptic genus, which is a protected quantity, you would expect some sum over bulk geometries to happen.
I was wondering though if you wanted to say that it was, you know, it's a calculation that is localized on a different set of states, and it just so happens that, you know, each one of those states has a nice supergravity description or something like that, that it's really a different way of organizing the calculation, but it still fits sort of in your perspective.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's just that these states, you know that they have a nice supergravity interpretation because they're protected. So you know that you can deform and they have to be some sum over geometries in some sense. Let me not get into it, but if you're really interested, you can check out my paper because there's actually also some sense in which you can see all the semi-classical geometries from the boundary side. So it's not that they're completely gone. And so very roughly, the reason is that there's some, there's this grand canonical potential, what I call P. Mm-hmm. And there are some poles in this P. And whenever there's a pole, it means that very large covering maps of very large degrees are dominating. If you go close to these poles, every pole you can identify with some semi-classical.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Very nice.
So in that sense, there's a fairy tale in P. So not in the usual tau, but in TP. And it's actually something I kind of wanted to explore at some point.
Yeah. No. Okay. Thank you.
That's very thanks. Nice.
Let me just hijack that. So is that also true for these wormhole geometries?
I don't know. I was, you mean this fairy tale? What I just
yeah, said? Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I don't know, because one of the difficulties is that you have a priori two chemical potentials, and you need to compute some higher genus partition functions and so on. So it becomes like horrible. So I don't know, unfortunately. Yeah, I was hoping that you could understand it as
well. Mission discover. Cuidado para não sujar as coisas. Limpa bem os pés aí. E também no outro também.
Great. Actually, let me maybe ask a second, maybe somewhat naive question. So you discussed a bit how you can sort of at least like hand wavingly go from string perturbation theory around ADH3 to like around the BTZ black hole. How would that look if you wanted to do it the other way around? Like if you want to identify a particular part of your BTZ partition function with like, I don't know, vacuum ADS?
It's, I think, exactly the same. You just have to rotate the picture by 90 degrees. So in some sense, one thing I haven't really told you is that also in the vacuum of thermal ADS also has winding strings in it. So it like usually even the vacuum corresponds to a winding string. Everything is winding string. And it corresponds to the string that winds once around each boundary. So where the Wiltshire torus and the boundary torus is the same. So this means like more properly, I should have drawn also here like a torus, but this torus doesn't wind. And now if you rotate the picture by 90 degrees, it's still true. So then this becomes the vacuum of the thermal ADS, and this becomes some highly excited string in BTZ.
Yeah, I guess I was just a bit confused because, you know, the logic, you know, you put something like a very heavy string into ADS and you get a black hole that kind of seems to be more natural to me than you have some excited string in BTZ and then you have something which looks like a vacuum contribution.
Yeah, I agree.